Someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace. Trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street. Good morning. You're listening to you're listening to KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. The program you are tuned into is Left Turn on Bird Street. Thanks for joining us. We'd also like to let you know that this show is also heard on a few other stations. It's heard on WCRV 97.1 FM in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania. So thanks for joining us. My name is Dan Gelworthy, and I am joined by my co-host,
Tom Nato.
And thanks for joining us today. So
I'm sending out a special greeting to some new listeners in Virginia, of course, the station, and in Booth Bay Harbor, Maine.
Yes, and our station in Bealeton, Virginia is WYQZ 96.7 FM, low power, serving the Bealeton area. So thanks for joining us. We certainly appreciate it.
As I've explained to you privately, Dan, I have some special reasons to welcome listeners in those locations, Virginia and in Maine, but I'd better not delve into those too deeply at this time.
Yeah, we don't want to get any errant phone calls.
Or complaint or yeah, suspicion.
Right.
The what this means, though, is that we're now, get this, we're heard coast to coast on both sides of the Mason-Dixon
right
line, you know. And remember, Australia was playing.
That's right. That's right. There was a station in Australia that played our Christmas show. But let me give you the roster by our other stations.
Yeah.
We are also heard on WCRV 97.1 FM in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania. Also KQRP 106.1 FM in Salida, California. So thank you for listening to us on those stations. We certainly appreciate it. We also invite you to take a look at our blog, which is on the internets. It's not the internet. There's two of them because President Bush said so.
There's his and there's ours.
Right. And our blog site is www.ltobs.blogspot.com. Or if you're really lazy, you just go on to Google or Yahoo and just type in LTOBS. We'll come in at the top of your queue. And also, we like to direct you to the Bird Street, the Radio Bird Street KRBS's website is www.radiobirdstreet.org. And for our listeners in Michigan, in Maine, in Minnesota, in Mississippi.
All those M states.
All those M states. The red states, the blue states, we have the M states. You can listen to us on Live 365. And if you're out there someplace in the world and you want to call us, feel free to do so. Our number is 530-534-1200. And also we want to let you know at approximately 9:30 this morning, we're going to be interviewing one of our favorite bloggers, Wanda. She has the blog on the internet. It's called Podunk Post. And she's from Alabama, so we're going to be talking to her about the perspective of people from Alabama on things like national security, what they're thinking there.
Well, and you know, it's amazing to me that people in Alabama can read and write.
No, wait a minute.
And also be on the net.
Now, let's not diss our friends in Alabama. Wanda's from Alabama, and she's a great writer.
A transplant there.
No, we've talked to her before. We had her on about on 4th of July, I think, year before last. She has definitely a southern accent, but very intellectual. You know, there's Truman Capote. These from the South, you know. I mean, come on, Tom. Let's not diss our friends from Alabama. There's a few liberals.
Well, I've heard that there are people down there. But
anyhow, we have a full slate of topics we want to talk about. Go ahead, Tom.
And, you know, as I said, we have a guest that may or may not be listening in Maine because they can connect or not connect. But I got curious, and to get an idea of what the world was like today in Booth Bay Harbor, I went to the net site that had a Maine government webcam.
Okay, for Booth Bay. Obviously Booth Bay is on the ocean, but where geographically is Booth Bay from, say, Bangor?
Well,
Portland?
They have an expression, in Maine and elsewhere down there, down east.
Down east?
So because of the way Maine is shaped, it's left and right.
Okay,
not
sure.
Up and down, as the rest of the seaboard is. And so down east means further away from Portland, Maine. And anyway, so Booth Bay is some miles.
Is that north? Does down east mean north in Maine?
It means east, literally.
Okay.
Anyway, so Booth Bay Harbor is about a third or more so, 39% down the coast from Portland towards
New Hampshire,
to Canada.
That way. Gotcha.
Anyway, so what I did is I called up that site, and Booth Bay was, as I remember, Maine in general, slightly foggy, and mm-hmm. the tide apparently coming in.
No, yeah, tide coming in. So that's the way it is.
You do it in not slow motion, but in stills. So you kind of guess by that from one picture to the next.
That's kind of funny how you call it down east. I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and we call the northern part of Michigan up north.
Yeah, right.
It's up north. You know, when
is
people say, where are you going? Well, we're going up
there.
Well, there's the...
that's Minnesota.
No, Tom.
I learned
that in fifth grade geography. There's two peninsulas in Michigan. There's the lower peninsula, the Loopers. And the Upper Peninsula, the Youpers. And the Youpers are the ones who talk like they're from Minnesota. Okay?
Oh, those foreigners.
Did you ever see the movie Fargo?
Yes.
They talk just like that. They really do in the Upper Peninsula. There's only about 200,000 people up there. But when, you know, you say down east, well, in Michigan we talk about up north. And, of course, in California we talk Northern California, Southern California. There's no Eastern California, no Western California. It's Northern and Southern. Anyhow, now that we got our geography lesson
and
regional dialect out,
yeah,
everybody
we
welcome.
Do some story here.
And we got to do some stories, yeah. So I think the first one we want to talk about was one of the big stories this last week, and it's not really a story per se, one of the big events perhaps was President Bush's State of the Union address, which was, I guess, was it Tuesday night? I'm kind of losing track of my days.
Well, people have been writing about it every day since, and so you tend to lose your geography of time.
Right.
But I think it was the 31st of January, the last day of January. I think that's the traditional date set that address.
And just by the way, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, that the State of the Union address doesn't necessarily have to be an address. It can be a written statement, too, actually. Did you know that? In the Constitution, it's not written that they have to appear before the House and the Senate, you know, both houses of the Senate.
And
they just have to, in some form or way, communicate to the Congress.
For many years, for many decades, for a couple of centuries, practically, it was a much less formal. Then the media came, and then it became a show.
Right, right.
After that radio fireside talk by Roosevelt,
right,
then it was no end to it.
Right, and we've been in that constant downward spiral ever since.
And, of course, way back in those early days,
mm-hmm.
there was some truth involved in the statement. Now, you never know, from sentence to sentence, how many untruths are packed in each statement.
Funny you should mention that, Tom. Funny you should mention that, because in my own very little hand, I have... from the Annenberg Center of Media Studies, well-respected media nonpartisan.
Annenberg's rich, so they got clout.
Right, and they got clout, and they offended some organization, is a misstatement of the union. The president, and the story is titled, The President Burnishes the State of the Union Through Selective Facts and Strategic Omissions. And just to show you we're fair and, you know, open-minded, I think it can probably be said every president, in my lifetime anyhow, has probably burnished their statements in the State of the Union. They selectively use facts and omit information, and Bush is the master of it, though, I guess.
Well, Eisenhower actually made a good State of the Union message, and I think it was in his parting message.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a State of the Union or if it was his final address.
He's had something to say actually that was important and interesting and prophetic.
And what was that, Tom?
I forget. What was it?
Okay, I'll tell you what it was. It's three words.
Military-industrial complex.
Yes, and his
and
farewell
I think
address.
You mentioned media in there too somewhere.
Yeah, right.
Did he
really?
Yeah.
Is that right?
I was just rereading the thing or portions of it.
Just as a side note, before we get into the misstatement of the union from Bush, is that I think Eisenhower he had a different perspective, having been a career military man, and he could see the increased influence that the military-industrial complex had, and he predicted the state we're in now.
Not only predicted, but warned.
Yeah, right. He warned. So that's
and
his
actually,
contribution.
So he was a guy who actually knew what he was talking about.
Right. Yeah, because he exactly. saw it from both sides, the executive branch and the military branch. Anyhow, getting back to the misstatement of the Union, let's talk a little bit about it. According to the Annenberg factcheck.org is the website, the president left out a few things when surveying the State of the Union. First point, he proudly spoke of writing a new chapter in the story of self-government in Iraq and Afghanistan and said the number of democracies in the world is growing. However, he failed to mention that neither Iraq nor Afghanistan, where we are both occupying, yet qualify as democracies according to the very group whose statistics he cited. That's point number one. Let's see. This is the real interesting one, and we're going to touch on economics maybe in the second hour of today's show. The president said the economy gained 4.6 million jobs in the past 2.5 years. True. However, he failed to note that it lost 2.6 million jobs in his first 2.5 years in office. The net gain since Bush took office is just a little more than 2 million. And as a side note, it doesn't say this in the story, but I know for a fact that he's been in president for 5 years, and approximately 500,000 people enter the workforce every year. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. Well, somewhere in that story or elsewhere, I've read that so much of these employment figures are skewed because they're not mentioning how many people fall off the unemployment rate.
Right.
So they can't be mentioned or are not known.
But they're not counted. You know, they have a term for it, but people who basically give up looking for work because they can't find work, they don't include them in the statistics. So they're no longer considered part of the labor force.
They don't include all those millionaires who have stopped paying taxes so they can't be found. You know.
Right. Okay, let's see. What else did President Bush talk about? Okay. Bush spoke of a goal of cutting dependence on Middle Eastern oil, failing to mention that U.S. dependence on imported oil and petroleum products increased substantially during his first 5 years in office, reaching 60% of consumption last year. So in other words, 60% of our oil, our energy source, is coming from imports. You know, 40% is produced domestically, 60%.
Well, it's unavoidable since the resources in the United States that could be used are gone.
Right.
Used up.
Let's go back to the jobs a little bit. Let me just read a little bit more from this. And this is quoting directly from the State of the Union address. Bush said, quote, "Our economy is healthy and vigorous and growing faster than other major industrialized nations. In the last 2.5 years, America has created 4.6 million new jobs, more than Japan and the European Union combined. Even in the face of higher energy prices and natural disasters, the American people have turned in an economic performance that is the envy, Tom, of the world," unquote.
I envy what they're doing in Argentina. I don't envy what they're doing here.
But according to Annenberg, let's see, the president noted that the U.S. has gained 4.6 million jobs in the past 2.5 years. That's true. However, as we said earlier, most of the gains merely made up for the 2.6 million jobs that were lost during Bush's first 2.5 years. There's a graph which we've posted on our website, Left Turn on Bird Street.
I looked at that this morning. You posted it. That is depressing.
It is. I mean, there's a huge, huge valley, and then you come up to this year, and there's a little bleep on the radar screen.
Just
not
before
much.
The State of the Union message.
Right. So, you know, if you want to take a look at that, we have the graph on our blog at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. But basically, the president, like everybody else, has, you know, every other president has distorted the truth. And in fairness, I guess every president does it. He's just better at it. And he has more willing followers than other presidents. So
well, we sort of hashed this subject out in the car coming up here, and we've used up all our good material.
Right. Well, the next story we have for you is something Tom came across, and it's called While You Were Sleeping, and it kind of relates to the State of the Union address. You have that with you there, Tom?
Let's see. Do I? Oh, yeah. This is, I've just pulled it up, so I haven't reviewed this entirely, but this is by William Falk. It was from a story out of the New York Times, and he's saying that it was a great year of apocalyptic events. Hurricanes and floods and earthquakes humbled us. Holy wars raged at home and abroad. Deep Throat was unmasked. But the hero of Watergate, Bob Woodward, reemerged in a strange new guise, covering up White House secrets. Avian flu lurked. Brad dumped Jen. You know, that's what really broke my heart.
Hey, you know, that's really earth-shattering there.
The girl next door and took up with the enchantress Angelina. I can't see what got into his head.
I know. Jeez.
Anyway, so Falk just goes on to just highlight some of the things that were going on. And so I'm just going to read a couple of opening sentences to his story, saying that he mentions a blast from the past. To find out whether human activities are changing the atmosphere, scientists took ice cores from ancient glaciers in Greenland and Antarctica. Bubbles of air trapped in the ice provided a pristine sampling of the atmosphere going back to 650,000 years ago. Can you imagine?
Wow.
The study, published last month in the Journal of Science, found that the level of carbon dioxide, one of the greenhouse gases that can warm the planet up, is now 27% higher than any previous time. Then there's also the day after today. One of the more alarming possible consequences of global warming appears to be already underway, the rapid melting of the Arctic and Greenland ice caps. Then we had the Spanish flu.
Ooh,
they revived
the Spanish
it.
Flu
now,
was the one.
Why would they want to revive a flu that they'd gotten rid of? Probably spent a lot of money to do it, unless they wanted to use it as a weapon.
Yeah, the Spanish flu was the 1918 flu, right?
Yeah,
that killed millions upon millions upon millions of people.
Yeah, the ones
right?
They talked when I was in elementary school, which wasn't in 1918.
Right,
but they would tell you about.
Are you sure it wasn't? I thought.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Then. They have forbidden ideas. With more than 100 million users, the internet is booming in China, but they're cutting out a lot you can get.
Well, you know what?
Internet over there.
Just let me. I got to add a little thought on that. You know, last show we talked about Google, and you know, I am so disappointed in Google because they've basically caved to the Chinese government. You know, Google in China now is going to have. Self-censored. It's basically going to be censored in China now. Did you realize that?
Self-centered usually means that you...
No, not self-censored.
Yeah.
Censored.
Sure, exactly.
They're censoring it at the request of the Chinese
extravagantly
government.
Extravagantly, too,
yes.
By the way, from what I've read.
Anyhow, go ahead.
Anyway, the America's Most Wanted. Why is Osama bin Laden still at large more than 4 years after 9/11? We want to talk about that.
Well, as the president said, I really don't think about the man, you know. And now he does think about it, so he's flip-flopping, I guess.
Falk also wants to tell us that Mom was right. Scientists have always scoffed at the notion that getting a chill can lead to a cold. Viruses cause colds, they say, not cold air. But a new study found that dormant infections can be activated when certain parts of the body, we're not going to say which ones, particularly the feet and the nose. Well, that makes sense.
How about chicken soup? Have they done any research on chicken soup?
Get wet and cold. In the study, 90 volunteers spent 20 minutes with their feet in a bucket of cold water.
No,
you sit there.
Wait, isn't that what they call hypothermia?
I told you about my friend Anna Banana in college, who was boiled alive to measure the sweat that came off her. These things.
I thought she was baked. How can they measure the sweat if they're boiling?
Hot water and made her sweat and scraped off the. Anyway.
Wait, are you sure she wasn't baked? She had to have been baked if she was boiling the water. Perspiration would go into the water.
Baked means dry heat.
Yeah.
Boiled means wet
heat. Oh, so like a steam bath.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
That's kind of
isn't
last.
That what they call a parboil?
Exactly. You must spend a lot of time in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, this the last one I'll mention is that it won't last, Falk mentions. Falling madly in love significantly changes our body chemistry, but not for long. Researchers from Italy studied a group of people who had fallen in mad, passionate love in the past 6 months. Now, how would they know unless he says so? Comparing them with
how
people...
How do you measure that?
Well, I guess it's an opinion thing.
Yeah, okay.
Comparing them with people in longer-term relationships and with single people, the group consumed with passion had more of a stimulating protein called nerve growth factor in their blood. The more intense the feelings of infatuation, the more nerve growth factor there was.
So is that to say stalkers have a lot of that nerve growth factor in their blood?
Well, they do have a lot of nerve.
Yeah, I guess so.
But when these same lovers were tested a year later, the levels had dropped back down to a lower level.
So that's our
true
update.
Don't last.
Why while you were sleeping, which brings us to
happen very often, and it doesn't last either.
Right, and your hormones get spiked up according to that story. Okay, well the next thing on a little bit more serious note here, we want to talk about the new House Majority Leader, and his name is John. Some debate on this, but according to the Associated Press, it's pronounced Boehner. John Boehner.
I would have said Boehner or
Boner.
Boner or Benner.
I've heard it pronounced every way, but
I'll say it anyway. He says it, and I guess he says Boehner.
Boehner, and it's so it's pronounced Boehner. But this is an AP story, and it basically says the title of the story is Boehner's Empire Resembles Delay's. New House Majority Leader John Boehner's empire somewhat resembles predecessor Tom Delay's. And Boehner, if you may or may not recall, his first brush with fame came in 1995, and in the Congress they were debating a tobacco subsidy bill, and during the debate Boehner famously passed out checks on the House floor.
I like for the upfront corruption.
Right.
Why just go
out
in
the
doors?
Open. Give him credit. He did it right on the
on
the Congress floor. He passed out lobbyist checks to members of the congressional delegation, the Republican congressional delegation, from the tobacco lobby. So this is while they were debating it. So just
here's
keep
your
that
share,
in
here's your share. Smith, here's your share.
I hope this weighs your vote, Mr. Congressman here, Congressman Doolittle.
See this thing I'm waving? This could be yours if...
Yeah, right. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Mr. Boehner. Let me just read a little bit from this story. Over the years, the new House Majority Leader John Boehner has built a political empire with similarities to the fundraising machines of the man he's replacing, Representative Tom Delay. The Ohio congressman, who won an upset victory for the number two post, has distributed roughly $2.9 million to Republicans from his Political Action Committee since 1979, according to the campaign web finance website Political Moneyline. Some of the recipients this week returned the favor in voting for him. Among the other things, it says Boehner has accepted at least 30,000 in political donations from indicted Republican lobbyist Jack Abramoff, his tribal clients, between 2000 and 2004. And this is a real interesting one. In addition, billing records from the Northern Mariana Islands, a former Abramoff client, show at least 17 contacts between Abramoff's Mariana's lobbying team and Boehner's office, one with Boehner himself. And the Northern Mariana Islands are American territory out in the middle of the Pacific that
somewhere
they're out there someplace, and basically they have under their American territory, American control, they have basically sweatshop rules, and they can
slave
put made
camps.
In USA on it. They're slave camps. That's the long and short of it. So this is what we have. Let's go ahead.
Our Booth Bay Harbor listener may very well have been there.
Really?
A lot to do with the Pacific in the past.
He goes on to talk a little bit about that. Boehner was elected to the House in 1990 and began his career as a reformer. How quickly he fell off the...
No. Call it what the opposite of whatever you intend to do. That's
right,
the secret.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm going to bring Americans together.
let's see. Only a few years later, Barron was caught handing out tobacco industry money. Tobacco industry money on the House floor. He apologized. Well, that's okay. He apologized.
I'm sorry. I got caught.
Yeah. Then went on building his political empire. So basically, the whole crux of this is this guy is just another crook, another alleged crook that is, like the song by The Who says, old boss is same as the new boss, or new boss same as the old boss. Won't get fooled again. You know that song?
Right, yeah.
It's the same thing. He's a Tom DeLay redo, I guess.
Going back, I think there's a little irony going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Where you said that in a surprise win.
Yeah, right.
Now, I forget how they do it in the federal Congress. I know how they do it in the California state,
mm-hmm.
but I believe that the membership votes and the party in control basically controls who gets to be the speaker. And so what he did is he apparently surprised the Republicans with doing the same thing he was doing to surprise the Democrats.
Yeah, right.
And so they were hoist on their own petard, apparently.
There's some other similarities between Boehner and Tom DeLay. According to the Associated Press, he's an avid golfer with a perpetual George Hamilton tan. So, from Ohio. So what's this guy go to the tanning salon? There's nothing wrong with that, but he's going to tanning salons. This is just indicative of, what's happening in Washington, D.C. It's just influence peddling. Nothing's really changed. It's just a different face, a different tanned face, a different golfer taking trips to Scotland on lobbyist money. So, what are we going to do, Tom? What are we going to do about this? I just don't know. Do you?
I think we're going to put in a little musical interlude here.
Yeah, I think
we're getting pretty close
we're getting close.
You can see the clock.
I can see it. What's the track you want to play on this? I forgot.
Number 12.
Okay, number 12. So let's cue up number 12. Just like to remind you, you're listening to Left Turn On. Oh, let's stop that.
And this is dedicated, as they say. That's the button just below that button. This show was for a long time on at 8 o'clock on Monday mornings, the time nobody likes to get up. Anyway, so I opened the station and had to learn this stuff. Well, this is a small station, so the equipment changes frequently. So every time I could come in, it had different equipment. I had to learn something new. And so that's why I'm sitting over here and letting Dan stay over there.
Yeah, Tom gets to do the pontification. Well, I got to push all the buttons every day. Yeah, the jokes.
Somebody's smarter than I who makes the pontifications.
Well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, and this is KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Thanks for joining us. And we're going to take a short musical break, and we're going to have our interview with Wanda from the blog Podunk Post on in just a few minutes.
Of all places, Alabama.
Alabama, liberal in Alabama. But you question whether one exists.
Did she ever go outdoors?
We found one. She's a great writer, too. So we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street.
Your hat, the way you sip your tea, the memory of all that. No, no, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beams, the way you sing off key, the way you haunt my dreams. No, no, they can't take that away from me. We may never, never meet again on the bumpy road to love. Still, I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you hold your knife, the way we dance till three, the way you change my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me. No, they can't take that away from me. ¶¶ bumpy road to love. Still I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you hold your knife, the way we dance till three, the way you've changed my life. No, no, they can't take that away from me. No, they can't take that away. They can't take that away. No, they can't take that away from me.
You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Thanks for joining us today. We also like to invite you to take a look at our blog on the internet. It is located at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. And speaking of blogs, we have one of our favorite bloggers on the line with us.
That would be Wanda.
Wanda, good morning. How are you today?
How are you?
We're doing well. Wanda, first of all, before we get started, why don't you tell our listeners where your the web address of your blog and the name so they can take a look at it.
That's www.wordsonapage.blogspot.com.
Right, and the name of your blog is not really Words on the Page. It's something more appropriate, actually, isn't it?
Yes, it's called The Potent Post.
How did you choose that name?
Because I live in this little dinky town in southern Alabama, and I kind of call it Podunt, Alabama.
Makes sense.
Makes sense. You know, I don't know if you were able to listen to the program on the internet before you came on, but we were kind of saying, well, we found a liberal in Alabama, so it must be tough being a liberal in Alabama. Is it or is it not tough being a liberal in Alabama?
It has its moments. There's not a lot of us, but you'd be surprised. We're growing.
Well, good. Now, why do you think that the liberals are growing there? Is it because of economic situations or the realization that people, maybe a lot of people are coming to the realization that they're getting kind of screwed by the administration and the current system we have set up?
I think it has to do with people realizing that there's a whole lot of talk and not a lot of show.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people are really discarded with the thing in Iraq, with the war, that things aren't going well, and they're tired of hearing that it's going to get better, and it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, this booming economy that I keep hearing about, it hasn't made it down here to our parts. So...
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because we kind of alluded to that. President Bush said in his State of the Union address that there were, have the numbers here, how many millions of jobs created, but part of it was only made up for the loss of jobs during his first 4 years of the administration. And we question, too, whether or not this is, we don't question. We kind of realize that the booming economy he refers to isn't really happening here in California. And so you're kind of confirming what we're saying, that you have the same situation in Alabama.
Well, not only that, but you got to realize those figures include all the people that are now being employed rebuilding the Gulf Coast.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
And how is that going?
I haven't been down there, so I really don't know, but apparently it's not going all that well.
What do you think of so many people being forced out of New Orleans and then disinvited to come back by placing them far away and being poor people without the bus fare to get back?
Doesn't surprise me. I mean, nothing about this situation has ever surprised me. It's been a disaster since before it happened. It was just... nobody ever really thought it was possible, which was kind of dumb considering that, it's New Orleans.
From what I've read and seen is that some people looked at Katrina as a tragedy and others looked at it as a real estate deal.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure that the people with the big bucks are seeing New Orleans as a big dollar sign.
Right. You know, the other thing I want to talk to you about, and I mentioned in our email, just as a side note, in California even, I notice a lot of people really are kind of not, a lot of people that you come into contact with day-to-day life, they don't really care about this, the NSA eavesdropping and the domestic spying, and there's a, from my view anyhow, there's a huge disconnect between what the rights people are losing and they just don't care about it. Is it the same? Do you see the same situation in Alabama, or you know, what's the, what do people think there think about the eavesdropping, domestic spying?
They don't get it.
They just don't. They don't understand it whatsoever, huh?
It doesn't translate into their personal life for them. They don't see how it affects them.
How do you conclude this? What have you seen that makes you think that?
Because they all think they live such mundane, boring lives that nobody would be interested in knowing in what's in their email or who they're talking to or what they're talking about. And they don't translate it into an individual basis, so they don't see themselves losing anything here.
Self-oriented rather than publicly oriented.
Very much so.
And very interesting. You know, when you talk to people here in California and you know, you see it on the internet, there's about, I'm really surprised, actually, there's about a 50-50 split. About 50% of the people seem to think it's quite all right to spy on, you know, spy on the citizens of this country. And what do you think the proportion of people in Alabama who would be, who are in favor of that? If nationally it's 50-50, is it safe for me to guess that maybe in a solidly conservative state like Alabama, the percentage of people who think it's acceptable is a much higher percentage?
Probably. What concerns me is not so much the people that think it's okay.
Uh-huh.
It's the people who just don't care.
Yes.
Those
they just, it's like, oh, it's no big deal. So what? And it's not necessarily that they approve of it. They just don't care. They just assume that the government can do whatever they want.
Those are some of the big issues that everybody reads about, but you individually, what are you reading about that you find interesting or fearsome and what's going on in your... I didn't want to use that word, but what are you seeing that other people may have missed that you're concerned about?
My concern is the same thing today that it was 2 years ago, is the disconnect between the general public and the reality of what's going on. People are just not taking seriously the fact that this country is moving in a direction that is not positive. We're going backwards.
Is this because they don't have time, because the economy being what it is, they have to work more, they have less time to think about it, or is it because they don't think, or why do you? What's the root of all this disinterest?
I think there's a deep-seated apathy. People just... they're so caught up in their own little lives that politics is boring. You know, with 24-hour cable news, you got it coming at you, and you get sick of hearing it, and a good many people just don't want to hear it anymore.
Nationally, there have been some talk about Democrats in sad shape, but some up-and-comers. Locally, are there any local politicians in, say, city councils or county boards or whatever, or the state legislatures, any up-and-comers that have you noticed that the world should be paying attention to?
Are you saying you think we have Democrats in Alabama?
No. Anybody that has something to say that may be of worth and of value to the little guy instead of the big guy.
No. I don't see anybody on the scene. You know, the thing is we have a governor election this year,
uh-huh.
And Roy Moore. Is running for governor here. And the sad thing is Bob Riley, who is currently our governor, who is a Republican, and I'll tell you, he's a good guy.
Uh-huh.
He's our best hope.
That's crazy. You know, for our listeners' reference, Roy Moore is the... you remember who he is now, Tom. Roy Moore is the...
Ten Commandments Roy.
Right, Ten Commandments Roy. He was the former Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, and by...
Impartial by nature.
Right, and did he resign, Wanda, from that position?
No, he was...
Was he kicked out of office, I guess?
Impeached.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. It was a little more complicated than that, but yeah, he... He was removed because of his actions, but by and far, the people of Alabama support him, and that's a scary thought. That man is our governor. I mean, that would be like having George Wallace again.
But, you know, in politics, some people can have bad intentions but have great personalities. Does he come off well on TV or radio or in person? Have you seen him?
No, he doesn't. Not to me, but then you got to remember you're probably talking to the only I call myself as being conservatively liberal.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm not really a whole lot of either one. I believe in a lot of the things that conservatives believe in.
Uh-huh.
Like controlling the government and government staying out of your private life. But I also believe in individual rights and freedom. So I guess you could say I try to straddle the line.
Sure, I understand. Well, you know, that's one thing we've all often said on this show is that the neocons in the Bush administration, they're not really true conservatives. True conservatives believe in smaller government, less intrusion into your personal life and on several different levels. I want to get back to Judge Roy Moore. He was removed from office because he was the judge who refused to obey the court order to remove the Ten Commandment tablets from the lobby of the state Supreme Court in Alabama. And he actually had a small run at the presidency and the GOP nomination. Of course, he didn't go anyplace. Is there any polling data, Wanda, on how far along or how well he's doing against the incumbent governor for the Republican nomination?
I haven't seen anything other than they released the figures a few days ago on campaign donations and the status of the campaigns, and Roy was at the bottom, right down there with Singleman?
Uh-huh.
Who's currently under indictment.
wait a minute. Wasn't George Wallace from Alabama?
Yeah. Well, Wanda said that earlier.
I'm getting my geography straight.
Right.
Yeah, Roy's another George, just kind of...
So he's not very successful in raising funds at this point?
No, not really. When I hear about it around town, it seems to be the general idea that Republican people seem to think that we Democrats are more afraid of him than they are.
Huh, interesting.
Because they know they're not going to vote for him. So
he's just going to be kind of a flash in the pan sort of thing. You don't think he'll actually get the nomination from the sitting governor?
Well, I got to tell you, I thought that about George Bush in 2002.
Well,
you were wrong.
Now that we've established that you're a right-thinking person, there's a lot of wrong-thinking people. There's one website that is very interesting, very well written. I think I may have mentioned it in the past. Joe Badgent in Virginia is a very good writer who may be in your same situation. And if you get a chance, you might check his site out. Just Google. Joe Badgent, or Badgent, Bagent, and you'll find him. He has his own personal website, and he's very, very good.
Yeah, he's very insightful. He has because he's from Virginia, and
he writes like a real working man.
Yeah, and he's outside the Beltway, so it's not like he's in inside the Beltway, Virginia, or anything like that. So getting back to when's the primary in Alabama for the governor race?
I have no idea.
Put you on the spot there.
I think you're not going to vote.
Probably, I'm guessing May or June.
Oh, okay. Well, you'll have to keep us updated on your blog about Roy Moore because it's funny. A couple years ago, I put something about Roy Moore on our blog, and about every couple weeks, we have a tracker and we get inquiries that direct people to our blog about Roy Moore.
Did they get a shock? Huh?
Yeah, I guess they probably do. Unless they're liberals, they could be looking for a laugh or two. Well, why don't you tell us about writing your blog, because you are obviously I really do enjoy reading your blog because. Your writing is very coherent, and it's well edited, and it's very sound reasoning. What What are some of the motivations that you find for writing your pieces? Is it just the news in general, or how it relates to your personal life, or just exactly what motivates you to write, your particular post on your blog?
Just the need to vent, just to put it into words and to just say, you know, this is wrong. This is, people wake up. I suppose it's like a cry in the dark, but it's where I express what sometimes I feel like nobody's listening.
Right.
Don't you have a service that tells you how many people visited your site?
Yeah, I do. I rarely look at it, though, because it's really not about how many people come around. It's more about me doing my part.
Okay.
I have a numbers tracker that tells me, but I have no idea. You know, I don't think I've looked at that thing in ages. But
what I find,
I have a faithful few who read every day, or you know, when I post, and even some who don't agree with me.
What are you going to write about next?
I don't know. I really, you know, just recently I've had someone join me on my blog, a guy from Seattle.
Oh.
His name's Scott. He's been guest posting on my blog. And I have to say, Scott's posted some really good stuff. He really is good. And, I mean, he's one for facts and figures and putting it all right down there. And so I've been kind of letting him do some guest blogging, and I've really enjoyed reading him, too.
Well, that's good, and that's great. And, you know, that's, I think what you're doing is, along with a lot of the other bloggers, is it's on a certain level for us, it's therapeutic, because you know that you're trying to do something, trying to convince a few people out there of what's really happening. So it's therapeutic on a certain level, and strange as it may sound, it also may be, it can clear your conscience, you know, that you're not just letting these things happen.
Nothing will clean your mind.
Yeah, right. That you're trying to do something, be it we're small voices that we are out in the wilderness, you're trying to convince people and let people know and let the truth shine on. So it's you know, for all of us, we don't make any money out of it, so it's really a passion that we're doing, I guess, out of concern more than anything else. Would you agree?
Yeah.
You know,
I tell you, back when I first started doing this, mm-hmm. I remember thinking, this is going to, people don't even have a clue what's going on and what's happening, and it's going to happen so slowly that it's going to seep right in there, and I want to have a record. I want to be able to look back and say, you know what, I was liberal and I was fighting this, but it wasn't cool to fight.
Right.
That's a, isn't that the I told you so gene in women?
Yeah. Or you could say it's I was country before country was cool.
Yeah, that's
right. No, I think I like Tom's one. It's the, you know, we've all of us men have experienced the I told you so. You're usually right about these things, and we hate to admit it, and we won't admit it. We are admitting it,
but
on
we
the
do
air.
Know to expect it.
Yeah, right. It's coming around. So what do you foresee in the next, you know, Tom and I are, I don't want to say we're doomsdayers, but my prediction is things are going to continually get worse until some big, you know, catastrophic event, and I'd say economic event, happens before people wake up. What do you think is going to need to happen before people wake up and really see what's going on? What in the next few years, what do you see?
I think that it's going to have to be something big. I think it's going to have to be something that can't be swept under the carpet.
Uh-huh.
You would think this whole Jack Abramoff thing would wake people up, but and Tom DeLay and this, it's just, it's out there. People can see it, but they're just like, oh, well, that's what politicians do.
Right.
You know where I get the best feel for the general public is I have another blog. I have a personal blog.
Uh-huh.
And the people that read that blog read it on an almost daily basis.
And what's the name of that blog?
Pardon?
What's the name of that blog?
Emma Bell.
Okay, and I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead. What are people saying on that blog?
But first of all, they don't like to talk politics.
Uh-huh.
When I post something that's even slightly political, you can see they don't even bother. They flip over there, they get the first couple of lines, and then they just go on. They don't comment. They don't do anything. So there's that disconnect. They don't want to talk about it. They don't
right.
want to hear it. And if I persist and I won't, don't post for a couple of days, and they finally realize, okay, well, she wants us to comment on this, they'll say things like, you know, we're screwed. Who cares? What? There's nothing we can do.
So basically, as you said earlier, there's just a huge disconnect. There's apathy. People really don't care. They don't think it has any impact on their life. And if it does, there's nothing they can do about it.
Or put okay. another way, is they've been beaten down so long, they don't care to get up.
They think they have no power. I think regardless of what everybody says, I think people genuinely believe our election system is so screwed up that there's just no hope of ever having an honest election again, and therefore even their vote doesn't count anymore.
That's interesting you mention
that. It doesn't, because of the invention of the new way to count votes.
Right, the diebold, the black box
sure.
voting, the electronic voting.
The black box voting, yeah, that's about it. I think that even without it, I mean, just look at Florida in 2000, the ballots, the chads, all that. I think if you're going to steal an election, there's a way to do it, and I don't think that it, you know, and I think the general public believes that. I think they think their vote doesn't count anymore, so they go, they cast their vote, but they really don't believe that they're making a difference.
Right.
Let me ask you this. Assuming, of course, we're coming to the end of the Bush administration, and there'll be another race in 2008, who do you think will be running?
You know, it scares the life out of me, but I'm almost certain the Democrats are going to give Hillary Clinton the nomination.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, on the Republican side, this has been my prediction for several years. Excuse me. And this is I wouldn't say it's a dark horse candidate, but I would not be one bit surprised. I think Jeb Bush gets termed out this year from governorship. I wouldn't
I don't
be
think
one
he
bit.
Run.
You don't think he will? I think he's going to run.
Run is a misnomer now. You don't actually
yeah,
run.
Right.
You get to be selected by the people who are already in office and plan to stay there, and they fix the rest.
Well, I got to ask you a question. You bring up Hillary Clinton. Do you think Hillary Clinton would even try the campaign in Alabama? Yeah, I mean.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not. But I'm telling you, the only way Hillary Clinton is going to be elected president is if Condoleezza Rice runs against her.
That would be a real tough vote for a lot of conservatives. A white lady or a black lady, you know?
That's what I'd like to write about.
Gingrich will be elected before Hillary Clinton because the South will never support a woman. They may tell you they will, but when they walk in that voting booth, they will never vote for a woman.
Interesting. That's an interesting perspective. You know, how do you that does raise a good question. If it was a race between Condoleezza Rice and Hillary Clinton in 2008,
who would lose?
Yeah, who would lose?
Could they both lose?
This is actually what I think would happen is, yeah, they could both lose. There could be a third party candidate. Maybe we should draft Roy Moore. I mean, you know, he had a stamp in the
woods. Draft a third party candidate. Could we maybe go for like John McCain or Al Gore or somebody who might actually do some good?
Yeah.
I'm praying. I am really praying that Al Gore will decide to run again.
I don't think he will.
I believe he can win.
He won the first time. Yeah, he did. He did win the first time.
Okay, he won the first time, but yes, I think this time, I think that he can win. I predict that either Gingrich or Giuliani are going to be the Republican nominees.
Well, we got you down for that, Giuliani or Gingrich.
The two G's.
Okay, my dollar is on Jeb Bush. Because they want a continuation. Who's your bet for the Republican nomination, Tom?
Because Bush is leaving office, and then he's still got all this hanging over his head, and it's not going to be a positive thing. I think the name Bush just is going to do him in.
I don't know.
I think you're assuming that people actually get the vote and have it count. I think that there's a good chance that Jeb Bush could run and would be elected by the way they've invented now. But I think what the real question is, will Cheney be appointed vice president again to continue running?
Yeah, right. Well,
you know, this is the only guy alive who could have so many health problems and so many heart attacks and still
be. He's like, I don't know if you ever watched The Simpsons. He's like Seed Montgomery Burns. You know, they use the analogy. Montgomery Burns had so many diseases. He went to the Mayo Clinic. He had so many diseases, but they were all jammed at the door, so one was fighting the other one, so he would live forever. You know, it's kind of like, you know,
there you go.
Dick Cheney.
There you go.
Well, Wanda, we got to wind down here. We're towards the end of the hour. Before you go, I'd like you to tell our listeners where they can locate your blog on the internets.
www.wordsonapage.blogspot.com.
Okay, great. And we encourage our listeners to take a look at that blog because it is a really well written blog, and I check your blog out almost daily. And it's also linked from our log at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. Wanda, thanks for joining. Any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Pay attention. Get involved.
Very good. Wanda, we'll have you back on again sometime in the near future, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for giving us your time this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay.
Great talking.
Bye. Yeah, that was a nice note to end on Dick Cheney there.
Do you ever notice that the people we arranged to talk with are much more intelligent than the ones that call in to talk to us?
No. We got some intelligent callers in here.
Oh, is she here? Kathy? Is that here?
Oh, we have a few others calling regularly, Tom. They're very intelligent. Yeah, we're just goofing on our audience there. Anyhow, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other Saturday on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Our program can also be heard on the following stations: KQRP 106.1 FM in Salida, California, WCRV 97.1 FM in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania, and our newest station to pick up our program, and thank you for listening to us, in Bealeton, Virginia, is WYQZ 96.7 FM. And, of course, our program can be heard around the world on the World Wide Web by going to RadioBirdStreet.org and clicking on Live 365. And I think we have some listeners in Michigan and Maine today even, don't we, Tom?
Well, we have at least one, maybe, one? If all the equipment works. But I'm so used to it not working that I'm not guaranteeing it.
Well, we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back for our second hour. Stay tuned. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street.